Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello reports from the U.S. Bishops' Conference, where she spoke with Bishop Daniel Flores of Brownsville, Texas, about the bishop's efforts to reach Latinos and other underserved communities through Catholic schools. Also, Dan Burke talks with Matt Christoff about his work to empower Catholic men in their witness to faith. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register, and Dan Burke, executive director of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Bishop Daniel Flores, was appointed the sixth bishop of Brownsville, Texas, in 2009 by Pope Benedict XVI. He is the third native Texan to serve the Rio Grande Valley as bishop. He also serves as chairman of the Committee on Cultural Diversity in the Church and is on the board of directors for Catholic Relief Services.
Bishop Daniel Flores, it's great to have you here to speak for a few minutes, taking some time out of this bishop's meeting. To talk a little bit about your report to the bishops yesterday. You are the head of the Committee for Cultural Diversity, and you were working with Archbishop George Lucas of Omaha, who's the Committee of Education, and you had a report on K through 12 education and on how to reach out to the underserved population. So can you tell us a little bit about that report that you gave to the bishops?
Yes, it was a report that was really collaboratively prepared so that we could look at the issue of Catholic schools and the future of Catholic schools in the United States to help people understand the benefits of a Catholic school education, but with a focus, which was what I kind of tended to move towards in my remarks, on underserved populations, which would include the growing Hispanic, Latino population in the United States, because most of school-age kids, it's a tremendously high number of our school-age kids in the country are of Hispanic or Latino origin, but also the African-American community, the Native American community. Communities that benefit a great deal from Catholic education shows high graduation rates, high success rates in terms of just their careers, but also high participation in the life of the church, and that how we have to make a special intentional effort as a church, diocese by diocese, parish by parish, to reach out to the Latin American community, the African American community, the Native American community, to kind of find ways to make our schools a possibility for them. Many of our communities that are underserved may not think that a Catholic education is even conceivable, but that there are creative ways that local communities, the diocese, the parish can help make it an attractive possibility and to let them know that there is a way by which we can help to make it possible for our young people to have the benefits of a Catholic school education.
Now let's talk about that Latino community, because I think the statistics show that I think it was of school-aged kids, there are half of the U.S. population of our school-age kids are Hispanic. What are the statistics in Catholic schools?
Right now, we're at about 15% of the young people in our Catholic schools are of Hispanic Latino origin. And of the Catholics in our Catholic school systems, it's about 20%. So they account for a higher percentage of the total Catholics. And not all the youth who go to our schools are Catholic. But we serve, you know, to all the communities that are interested in coming to receive the benefits of the education. What it says is that, in fact, we are experiencing a tremendous demographic shift in the United States, and the church has to kind of get ahead of the curve there, especially since the success of our schools will depend a great deal upon our ability to attract the immigrant population. And one of the points that I think it was important to emphasize, as I made in my remarks before the bishops, was that the Catholic school system in the United States was founded precisely to assist the immigrant population. Last century, well, in the 19th century, the beginnings of the large immigrant waves that came from, especially from Europe, to establish our Catholic schools so that they would not lose the faith, so that they would be able to get a good education, so they would be able to do well in the society, and that tradition needs to continue. However, the circumstances have changed, and it becomes necessary for us to make a very specific, intentional effort to kind of open up the possibility of a Catholic school education for a lot of communities that because of the history of the countries they come from, they would have not thought possible. And so that's one of the things that for the good of Catholic schools, we benefit when we extend ourselves to the underserved populations. And the school benefits, and certainly there are tremendous benefits for our young people who participate in a Catholic school education.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio, and I'm talking with Bishop Daniel Flores of Brownsville, Texas. We're talking about serving the underserved through Catholic schools. We're at the Bishop's Conference. We're taking a few minutes during the Bishop's lunch break, so we're thankful to have him. And Bishop, I do want to know, though, what is it that has caused the schools to change from being immigrant population schools as they were in 1965 and when the schools were full to the brim. And now we are underserving this immigrant population, or even a diverse population we're underserving. So what has changed?
Well, a lot has changed demographically in the United States in terms of centers of population. As you know, most of our in the early part of the 20th century, most of our Catholic schools were built in the cities, the inner cities where the immigrant populations tended to settle. And as the second and third generation became successful, because in fact our Catholic schools were very successful in educating our young people, they would get a good job, they would be able to move to another part of the country, they would be able to progress socially. But what has happened inside the country is that there's been a population shift. This is independent of any immigration data, but the fact is that there's been a shift of concentration in Catholic schools for the immigrant population in the Northeast and in the upper Midwest of the United States to the South and to the West. And what has happened then is that we have a higher population. The growing church, so to speak, is growing in the South and in the West. Now it's a pretty even 25% in each quadrant of the church, rather quadrant of the United States, 25% in the Northeast, 25% in the Upper Midwest, 25% in the South, 25% more or less in the West. And that, but the infrastructure of our Catholic schools hasn't shifted with that. And it's understandable. It's very hard. You can't pick up a school building and move it across the country. But the immigrant population has tended first to settle quite evenly along the South and on the West, although there is a large number of immigrant populations from Latin America, but also from Africa and other countries in the Northeast. But it's much more evenly divided. And so because we have so many school buildings in the places of the original immigration movements in the early part of the 20th century from Europe and from Asia, then now we have to kind of recognize the fact that our populations are much more evenly divided. And we have to, and it's much more difficult, given economic realities, to then start building up a school system that has not yet, doesn't have the resources or hasn't had the experience that the Northeast has had, or the Upper Midwest has had, in terms of building schools, opening schools. What we're seeing right now is that, you know, because we read about it in the newspapers, our Catholic papers especially, that certain dioceses are having to merge schools and close schools. So that's precisely because of this demographic shift to the South and to the West. Whereas in my diocese, which is in the South of Texas, we're looking to find ways to open schools and the schools we have, you know, to make them more accessible to the folks that are there. The fact is that our schools have been very successful and so successful that families have moved away from the original place they settled. Immigrant populations, as a rule, tend to settle together, and then with the second and third generation, with economic success, tend to move out of the city. That's just a reality.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I am at the Bishop's Conference in Baltimore, and I'm speaking to Bishop Daniel Flores of Brownsville, Texas, and we're talking about Catholic education, especially trying to serve the underserved populations. Now, can you tell us some of the ways that the bishops are actually suggesting for schools to be able to reach this population?
Yes, well, one of the practical things that we suggested is that very often, because there's the Latino population especially comes from a bilingual home, not always, but where the parents would more likely speak Spanish, whereas the children are more comfortable in English. This is a dynamic in the home that it helps when the school staff, the school, the teachers and the counselors have some facility, at least somebody there who is able to navigate both languages, one person even, just to help parents answer their questions, because oftentimes the issue is, who do I know at the school? Can they help me when I have questions? And that relational aspect of knowing what the family situation is, knowing what the dynamic is in terms of language, and then being able to just be sensitive to that. Not that you have to speak Spanish perfectly well, but to kind of show this effort to kind of understand the family context there, which I think goes a long way. A lot of times for a Hispanic family that doesn't have a lot of resources economically. The first question is not how much does it cost. The first question is, are there people there that I know and that I trust and who will will give my kids a good education? And then the issue of the cost is something that, well, okay, yes, it's a lot of money, say for a poor family or middle class, lower middle. But we can find a way. I think what the diocese wants to do in every case is we can help you. There are ways. There are many foundations and families, you know, who want to help and who can make resources at least more available.
Very good. And so my last question is, have you looked around and found where they're doing it well? Where are the schools reaching out?
Exactly. I think we have done that, and I think that's part of a more expanded report that's available to the bishops, more than what we even said at the public session. Places like Richmond, the Diocese of Richmond, Chicago, Tucson, in Texas, Houston and San Antonio, but also my own diocese. We opened a high school 4 years ago. And it was a tremendous moment.
Great. Yeah,
and we're going to graduate our first class. It's been a struggle, but there are a lot of people who are very dedicated to making the sacrifice needed to start this school, not just for their own kids, but for the future generation. Because there's a great sense of what a tremendous gift it is to have a Catholic education, a Catholic school, and it develops leadership. It develops leadership in the church, but also for society. So there are very, very good examples, and that's one thing that the bishops now have more access to, is to knowing what works, and that's
right.
What we want to know.
Are you a product of Catholic education?
Actually, I'm not. I went through a religious education program in my local parish, but there was no Catholic school nearby where I grew up in Corpus Christi.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. I'm a product of it, and I have to vouch for it, and I hope that many others can take advantage of it.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, because I've known many, many people who benefited from it, and I'm happy to be able to do everything I can, because I'm a firm believer in the importance of Catholic schools in our dioceses.
Well, Bishop Daniel Flores, thank you so much for being with us, taking the time out of your lunch break at the Bishop's Conference. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. God bless you.
When we return, you know what evangelization means, but have you ever heard of emangelization? This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, Provider and Protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Matt Kristoff, is a 2006 convert to the Catholic faith. In 2013, he launched the new Emangelization Project to help the Church confront the Catholic man crisis and to focus on evangelization of Catholic men.
Matthew, this is Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you with us to talk about the new Emangelization Project. Just to be clear, you know, on radio, we don't have a little screen where we can put up the word evangelization, but it's a call to confront the Catholic man crisis and to respond with new ardor, methods, expressions, whatever we need to do to draw men into a deeper relationship with Christ and His Church. You know, Matthew, I speak all around the country, travel almost monthly, and the proportion of men to women who come to my talks is extraordinary. It's probably for every 10 women, there's like 2 men. Is that a common issue?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This man crisis is something that's been brewing for a long time. But at the essence of it, it's just men have not had that conversion experience that has drawn them into a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ and the Catholic Church. And as a result, it's hard to get them to show up a lot of times, especially for mixed gender events. what the research is telling us, and maybe I'll just give you a brief background on the research. We launched the project last year. Since then, we've assembled a lot of research data. We've had discussions with dozens of evangelists, be it bishops, priests, deacons, and many lay evangelists that are well known. And then we've also launched a survey, which we recently have fielded, helping priests to better understand how they can evangelize men. Well, what we're finding is that large numbers of men really need a male-to-male kind of evangelization effort for them to be drawn into the faith.
So a male-to-male effort. Well, that makes a lot of sense because I haven't spent a lot of time going fishing with women or hiking with women. It's always, or shooting with women. Guys are always getting together, doing the manly stuff. Does that have something to do with it, just the makeup of a man?
Well, yeah. I think, as we look at the new evangelization, and that's evangelization with a V, it started basically at Vatican II. And during the last 40 years or so, most of our efforts in the church have been gender neutral. Or if they're not gender neutral, they're focused on women and drawing women into the church, given the need for balance. But what happens is men don't respond necessarily to just a flat evangelical approach. Men are different. And in the life of the church, of course, we've seen that men have always been evangelized differently. I mean, Christ himself evangelizes 12 men as his core. We see in the monastic movements that genders are separate. We see in things like Focus and St. Paul's outreach that they have very separate men and women tracks, because men need something specific and they need something different, and they need to be evangelized by men. And it's a male thing.
This is Dan Burke with Matt Christoph talking about the new evangelization, the challenges we face in the church in drawing men to a deeper relationship with Christ. Matt, what are the different methods to draw men in? I mean, what does it take to get a guy connected with events or whatever that'll help his faith?
Well, the first thing to come to grips with is the fact that there needs to be a specific man focus, which means man-specific events. Men don't respond well and in big numbers to mixed-gender events. They just don't. I mean, it's been proven time and time again. You can see it, and you've seen it in your own experience. So the idea of having a man-specific event is really important. The second thing is that male-to-male or man-to-man invitation. A lot of times Catholics, we believe that the way you evangelize is that you actually put something in the bulletin, and that is sufficient. What the research is saying, and what the evangelists that are effective in evangelizing men are telling me, that there's this, they call it the tap principle, which is basically tap a guy on the shoulder and invite him to something where there are going to be other men. And of course, as we look at there are various categories of men, from men that are highly committed, men that are practicing their faith, and men that are not practicing their faith. We have to be careful about the types of events that we're holding, calling men to. A lot of what we see in the men's evangelization movement are either large conferences or they're an attempt to get men into small groups. The average guy is not going to move into a small group immediately. So we have to have feeder events, that have low requirements to entry, and where men can basically meet men. That male-to-male friendship thing is something that's a great opportunity for us, because many men are lonely today, and many men are lacking those kinds of deep and enduring friendships. So that's a great opportunity, and men will respond to it.
So you're saying that big events, let's say, even if they're targeted at men, with the method of trying to get them right out of that sort of maybe a first event for them into a small group is just statistically it doesn't work?
Yeah, well, you could look at a very variety of things that are happening. We're blessed within the church now as we're having these men's conferences, and they're growing in number. I think there were 60 or 70 of them in the last 12 months. But if you look who attends those, you get 1% to 2% of the men in a diocese, right? So you look at the small group events, you get 1% to 2%. You've got to find events, and we're experimenting and thinking about a number of types of events that can draw men in. For example, we did this survey entitled Helping Priests Become More Effective in Evangelizing Men. We had 2,000 respondents to a relatively ponderous survey, and 1,000 of them took the time to actually fill in comments and write, writing comments. There are priests out there that are doing this very effectively, that evangelize men. And when they do that, they reach out to men. They're speaking to them in their homilies. They're inviting men to men's groups. They have talks that they have focused on men. Men not only are engaged in the sacraments more, they're praying more, and they tend to have more and deeper friendships in their parishes. And we see the exact opposite true for those priests that were rated not effective in evangelizing men. Men are more isolated. They're not engaged in their faith. The other thing that came out of this is something that I think is a great opportunity for the church. The lowest rated thing that priests are doing, in other words, the thing that priests are doing the least, is gathering fathers and sons together. Mm. It was by far the lowest thing. This is a big opportunity because another theme that's come out of this event, of this research, is just the epidemic of pornography. It's dramatically impacting the faith lives of Catholic men. Every father knows that temptation and that destructiveness of that, and they're worried about their children. If we can design events and invite men to events where fathers and sons are drawn together, particularly around that issue of pornography, I think, you know, it's proven that works and draws men into the church. And we get the help from the ladies then too, because every mom who wants both her husband and her sons and daughters to grow in the faith.
This is Dan Burke with Matt Christoph talking about the man crisis and the new evangelization. Matt, the research is very helpful because it gives us a kind of a don't do this, do that. What's next? I mean, what really needs to happen at a parish or family level, whichever you think is most important, to really begin to shift? What I would say is, what are the key things that must happen for us to see a change in the church?
Well, there needs to be some recognition within a parish, hopefully by the priest, but also, you know, by the laymen in the parish, that there needs to be something focused on men, and to make a commitment to say, look, we are going to do things actively to evangelize men. And we're going to try a number of things, but at the core of it, we're going to get men together, we're going to pray, we're going to learn basics about the faith, and we're going to have fellowship. This is really Acts 2:42. You know, that's the way that early church started. And they devoted themselves to the apostle teachings and prayers, the breaking of the bread, and fellowship. This is what's needed. And that can start at any parish in the country today. And ideally, what you hope to see is, you know, a priest that says, look, you know, priests are busy, they're stretched, to gather 12 men together. And every parish has 12 men who are on fire for our Lord and for the church. And to say, look, let's do things to evangelize men. Let's draw them together. Lots of suggestions. One of the things that we've done effectively up in the Twin Cities is a thing called Catholic Man Night. It's really simple. It's a kind of a tongue-in-cheek name, but we draw men together for adoration, confession, a manly meal with lots of calories, and discussion, all focused on meeting Jesus. We've got 35 different topics we draw men to, and you know, we get large turnouts. And it doesn't matter what parish we do them in, men show up.
You know, it's interesting when you say you get large turnouts. I led a Bible study before I moved to work here for EWTN from Colorado Springs, and it was constantly growing. I mean, and we had guys, one guy was a nurse, so he'd work till 5 a.m. and then drive out to the meeting. We had cops, we had a surgeon, we had a real mix, but the general truth was that if you provide them with something of substance, they're going to come, because though women tend to be more open spiritually, I think the state of our society and the world is really bringing a great deal of pressure to draw men to look beyond themselves, or beyond, you know, what the world can provide, to find the real happiness, the reality of what needs to be brought to the heart, which is Christ. Now, Matt, we only have a few seconds here left. How can folks find out more what you're doing to be encouraged and to really begin to make a difference in their parish, their families, their diocese?
Well, I'd invite everybody to go to newevangelization.com. That's like evangelization, but with an M instead of the V. And on the site, there's lots of resources. In fact, we're looking at, you know, all the different men and programs that are focused on men. We're listing those. But we've also got all those interviews that have been done. There's 60 of them so far. You can listen to the audio and listen to what, you know, the people that are in the trenches are thinking.
Great, Matt. Well, I sure appreciate all that you're doing for the church and helping us understand this problem. And we'll pray with you and work with you to try to get men more deeply engaged in the church. And thank you for being with us here on Register Radio.
Oh, thank you, Dan. God bless you, too.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.